And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Mark B. from Oceanside.
Thank you. Wow. Big room. All right. My name's Mark. I am an alcoholic. I want to thank Sam. Thank you again. And our token takers, Heather, Dan, and Richard. Nate, you did a great job. Thank you. You hit it. Home run, baby. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And that's what normally we share in a general way. So let's start it off from the beginning. You know, my sobriety date is November 23rd, 2005. I just celebrated 14 years. I say that just so you know there is hope. You know, that's all that sobriety to me. You know, when I got here, a lot of people was always, you know, I went to, my home group is the men's South Oceanside men's group in Oceanside. And when I went there the first time, there was a lot of men with a lot of sobriety. And honestly, I did not believe them. You know, guys were saying they had 20, 30 years. Did not believe that. Because if you drank like I drank and felt like I felt, there was no way you can get that much time, you know, because I always had to have something to make me feel better about myself. You know, I'm the middle child of five kids, two older brothers, two younger sisters, and I never felt a part of even that, you know, when I was with them at a young age. So I always needed something. I was always angry. You know, before I got here, I was angry, you know, and before I started drinking, I was angry. And the anger came from, honestly, I believe, you know, I know where it came from. When I was 12, my mother passed away. All right. And when my mother passed away, my brothers and sisters got moved to Georgia with my grandmother, and they put me someplace else. So I didn't even get to live with my brothers and sisters. So that also played into how I felt about myself, you know. And I still haven't figured out why. You know, nobody's ever told me why. The best they could come up with was that my aunt and uncle had my cousin was the same age. And my grandmother was kind of old, and she couldn't take five kids. And my father left us with our grandmother. So, you know, I was angry before I even drank. You know, and I acted out before I even drank. I think I was alcoholic before I even drank. Because a lot of things I did were alcoholically before I even drank, you know, so. So what happened was I was living in Ohio, and I always tell people I lived in Ohio. They're like, oh, did you go to the house and all that? And actually, I did live in Akron, Ohio, but I was a kid, and I didn't know nothing about AA back then. I used to have people always ask, oh, did you go to the house? And, you know, they did this, and I was like, no, I was 12 years old. I didn't give a damn about alcohol. And so I was living there. Hadn't seen my brothers and sisters for about 5 years. No, 2 years. 2 years. Almost three. And my brother came to visit me. And my brother Michael, I will talk about him a little bit more. He was like a big inspiration in my life. You know, he came and visited us. And he said, hey, I'm going to visit my dad, and I was like, oh, really? I'm going with you. And I told my aunt and uncle, I said, I'm going back to Illinois with my brother, and they was like, cool. You know, they knew I wasn't coming back. And got there, and funny part was when I got there, he says, oh, you know, he had remarried already. I got stepbrothers and sisters. And he says, so when are you going back to Ohio? And I told him, I'm not. And that's how I ended up staying with my father. So, and I burnt down a couple of his houses in the process of staying with him. So, you know, I burnt down two of his houses. So I kind of got him back for that. So, yeah, I told you I'm an alcoholic, you know. I pay you back, you know. So, and that is true. But So, you know, I got back to Illinois, and, you know, there's a lot more going on and other things. You know, it just takes too long to go through all of it. I don't want to stay on that part, because that part was what got me here. The part that helps my life is what I get today. You know, all that stuff, yeah, you know, I can take your story, put my name to it, and pretty much it's the same shit, right? It's what got us here and what's keeping us here. That's the part I like to hear about, you know, like Nate was talking about. We do this so we can help another, you know, that's why I do this, all right? But to qualify, we'll qualify, you know. I did everything in life, you know. Once I moved back, you know, I went to school. You know, I wasn't an A student. I was just an average student. You know, I was who I was, you know. I played a little sports here and there, didn't care. I got kicked off the baseball team because I didn't like the coach. You know, these are the things I did, you know. I didn't even drink yet. You know, I hadn't drank. My father drank, you know. And I was scared to drink his drink because I was scared to drink his beer because I thought he checked his shit. And you probably find out I drank it. So I didn't drink. My first drink was when I was 17 in the military. Very first drink. And I can tell you it was in California. It was in 29 Palms. All right? I was a radio man. I was going to school. And my friends, I get there, and we go out. And they say, hey, we're going to E-Club. And that's when you still can drink on base, you know. And I was 17 years old. Never been out of Illinois. Well, I've been out of Illinois, but I used to go to see my grandmother. When my mother was alive, we would drive down there all the time. But, so, we go out, go to E-Club. My first drink was a zombie. I can tell you that right now. That's the name of the drink. That's what I had, was a zombie. And then I'm drinking these zombies, and then I see a friend over here, he's doing dip. And I'm like, shit, hell, this is a great night. Let me try everything I haven't tried. I get some dip. And so I'm dipping, I'm drinking, I'm having a great time, and the guy whispers over to me and says, hey, where you spitting the dip at? I'm like, oh, you supposed to spit it out? I've been swallowing it for the last hour. Trust me, I was in the shower that night, drunk, throwing up, feeling bad, and here's the part that's messed up. The next morning, I couldn't wait to do it again. All right? We always talk about one's too many, thousands never enough. All right. That was the first time I have felt good about myself. I didn't know none of these guys, but that alcohol brought us together as a cohesive group, as a bunch of men. Just, you know, now I'm not that middle child. Now I'm not that kid that got abandoned, because that's what I felt. I felt I was abandoned by my family. All right. I have two brothers and sisters. I have two brothers and two sisters I didn't even grow up with, all right? When I saw my brother, my oldest brother, his name is Eric, after my mother passed, and she passed in 76, I didn't see him till 1983, and he was in the military too. And I was sick, and this guy walks up to my bunk, and I look up, he looks just like me, and I'm like, oh shit, it's Eric. He found me, all right, in the military, Camp Lejeune. That was the first time I had seen him since my mother passed. So I had a lot of issues going on, you know. And trust me, I don't put no blame on nobody right today. There's no blame. You know, it is what it is. Everything that happened in my life brought me to this point because I have a better life today, you know, that I do have. But before we get into that, you know, the military, I did the military. I don't know if anybody's been in the military out in here. I did 6 years. I went in as a private, and I got out as a private after 6 years. I'm an alcoholic. I'm undisciplined. I do not like rules. I want to do it my way. Yes, 6 years. It's hard to do. They normally going to let you be a Lance Corporal. They didn't even let me be a Lance Corporal, you know. That's how my life kept moving along, you know. I tried to do the things I thought that men were supposed to do. You know, I didn't really have no understanding of what it was to be a man until I got to these rooms. You know, I thought, okay, get the wife. You know, I get out to service. Let me get the wife. Let me get the kids. I have 5 kids. And what happened to me, I did to them because I am an alcoholic. All right? My wife, I held her hostage until she escaped me. All right? That's what I did. All right? I get a job. I have a job. I'm working for actually Quaker Oats, the oatmeal people. I have a good job. I would go to work. I would go to work from 7 to 11. 7 at night to 11 in the evening. 11 at night. Excuse me. Actually, it started at 11 at night to 7 in the morning. All right? So I make it work. So now I get off at 7. I got a bar that opens up at 6, and I do 8 hours at that bar. All right? Then I go home, go to sleep, and I do it again. All right? Now, when do I have time for my family? But I'm making these kids, and I'm not being a father. But I'm thinking I'm a father because, oh, I'm paying this or I'm paying that. Really, I was paying my bar tab because they still would let you write out a tab. And, you know, that was back in the day. They don't do that too much. I don't think. I haven't been in a bar in 14 years. So I don't know what they do. But back then, you could write it off and then you pay at the end of the month because they knew you were. And that's what I did. That's what I did to my family. All right? The life I was living or thought I had to live, I could never live up to what I thought I needed to be. Alright? Never. Ever. Alright? The house with the picket fence and all that. I never got that. Never wanted that. What I wanted after I had that first drink in the military was to stay drunk. Because I didn't like my life. Alright? I was not happy with who or what I was. All right? At that time, I thought I was a victim. You was the problem. You was the problem. That was the problem. The wife and kids are the problem. She's complaining too much about my drinking, but don't she know everybody drinks? Everybody drinks. And everybody drinks because everybody I put in my life drank. See, that's what I do, too. I find people that are like me. All right? That's okay with the drinking the way I drink, all right? So then it seems normal because in the book it says something about how we think our alcoholic life is the normal life, all right? That's what I did. I surrounded myself with people. I had a bunch of friends. They all drank like I drank. Their wives complained to them too, you know? But our wives are wrong. What do they know? You know, what do they know? And I did that for a lot of years. You know, there was a lot of escapades in between, a lot of other crazy stuff going on, but it never worked out. So what happened? Let's get to what happened. All right, what happened is it stopped working. The drink stopped working. The friends that used to drink with me, some of them started cleaning themselves up because that's eventually what happens. They get tired of drinking and say, you know what, I got to grow up. I can't be that same person. I couldn't grow up because I was still at that 17-year-old kid. Now I'm in a 40-year-old body, 30 to 40-year-old body. All right? But I'm still that 17-year-old kid that took that first drink, took that first zombie. And that's what it made me, was a zombie. All right? I had to chase it. I could not understand how to live life without a drink in my hand or a drink in me. Any mind-altering substance I put in me, drink, whatever, take your choice. Pretty much done it all, okay? But by this time now, the wife done left me. Like I said, she escaped. She escaped, and we're friends to this day. And I thank her, and we can talk. I have made my amends to her because that's what we do. We clean up the wreckage of our past, you know? That's what this program is about, clean up the records of our past. And I did that. And I didn't apologize, but I told her what I did and whatever. We're good now. I actually spoke to her because my birthday, too, is 4 days. My belly button birthday is 4 days after my AA birthday. So she called me on my birthday, and we had a good talk. You know, we are friends today. You know, she escaped. I'm not a father to these kids. I lost custody of them. And then at the time, Now, I have five kids, four of them with my ex and one's with a lady, and I'm an alcoholic, so the best I can find, I'm going to be honest, and I'll just say one time, she was a crackhead, and that was my love of my life. I ain't going to lie. For 14 years, we ran the streets together, and we had a child together. That's my youngest. And she had two kids, and so I had a bunch of kids and whatever, but they all in my life today. But anyway, so what happened was everything's not working. I used to have all these, I won't do this or I won't do that. If I do this, then I'm not, if I don't do that, I'm not alcoholic, you know. And toward the end, I had crossed all them lines I had said I would never cross, all right. I was homeless. I was living in the streets of Escondido. I had a shopping cart because I always said I would never have a shopping cart. Toward the end, I had a shopping cart. All right. Had all my so-called possessions in that shopping cart. And I had the best shopping cart out there because it was indicative of my life. It was that one with that fucked up wheel going like that because that's how my life was. All right. That's how my life was. Pushing it down. All right. It's funny now. It wasn't funny then. I can look back at that today. And that's another thing I love from this program. I get to laugh at myself today. All right? So I'm at this. Now I'm going to jail. Because, you know, let's be honest. That's what happens. We start seeing the man a little bit more. You know? 40 years old, getting ready to do a two-year bid for possession and some other things and this and that. So I go to jail. They send me up to North Kern County to Wasco. Now, not in my mind. I'm not thinking about getting sober. I'm just thinking I got to get out of here so I can get back to the streets and do what I do. I know this time I'll do it this way. That way I won't get caught. See, that's that alcoholic mind saying, you know, I'll do it differently, but I'm still doing the same thing, and I'm still going to get the same results, you know, and I hated that because, you know, when I got here, you men in these rooms always had these great answers for us newcomers, you know, what is sanity? What is insanity? Doing the same thing over, expecting different results. I hated that, all right? I have a problem. Oh, she don't like me no more. I'm trying to be, oh, did you pray about it? I didn't want to hear that. Pray. I didn't even like God. God took my mother. I hated God. Honestly, at the beginning, after my mother passed, I pretty much said, and she was a very devoted church-going woman. She dragged me to church. Fall asleep in there, she would pinch me. Yeah, black mothers do that. They reach over, pinch your ear, get your ass up. Better listen to them. And I didn't want nothing to do with God. So basically, after she passed away, I said, I believed in something. But my belief was like this. I know you're there. You know I'm here. If you don't mess with me, I won't mess with you. That was at 12 years old. And that's what brought me, that's part of what brought me here. You know, the alcohol and my attitude, you know. And so now I'm homeless, going to jail. My so-called love of my life, she never come to visit me, never wrote me. Well, I think she wrote me once out of 2 years. Now, my brother Michael, I told you I would talk about him. He's always been in my life. He used to always, I would be locked up somewhere, and this is what I love about Michael. I'd be there somewhere locked up, and broke the thing. And he would, I'd be in there and they'd be like, Baker, you got a visitor. And I'm like, visitor? Because I don't tell nobody. You know, I'm an isolator. I don't want nobody to know where I'm at when I'm, whatever I do. And I go to the visiting room and look through the glasses, my brother Michael. And I'd be like, Mike, how'd you find me? He'd be like, oh, every few months I just go online and see what jail you're locked up in. I said, oh, you can do that? That's a thing? And that's how he would always find me. I mean, every time I got locked up, he would find me. He got to see me sober. Michael passed away in 2012, but he got to see me sober. He was talking about, you know, I understand your father. I get it, you know. My brother passed in 12. My father passed in 13, you know, and I got to be sober through all of it. I got to be of service to them. It wasn't about me. My brother, I flew to Chicago, and this is the funny part. This is what really, I have two older brothers. I have an older brother, retired Marine Corps. I call him the Black War Cleaver. Him and his family, you know, they call him Gunny, and his kids, they all, and Brenda, you know, it's just like, wow, that's a hell of a life, okay? And then I got two sisters. One's a teacher, both of them teachers, and they're great people. But I get a call, and kind of chokes me up every time, and it's like, hey, this is so-and-so from Mercy Hospital in Chicago. I'm like, what's going on? Well, your brother Michael said if he's unable to make any decisions for himself, that I am to call this number. Now, I done a lot of stuff to Michael over that course. I'm not going into all that, but I did a lot of stuff. And for him to want an alcoholic like me to be responsible to make decisions for him was beyond me. I almost cried. I flew back on June 29th. I walked in the room. Michael saw me. He was laid. They had put the tube down. And when I walked in, he looked up and he smiled. He gave me the thumbs up. And that was the last time he was conscious. He died July 9th. But when he saw me, I could see that look. And I had that look. And it was one of the, I will never forget that. And that's only because of this program. All right? That's what that's from. It's nothing I did. All right? So, I'm homeless. I get out of jail. I get my little $200 gate money. That's what they give you when you get out. Some of you guys know, you know. I know y'all in here. Y'all know. $200. And I get back to Escondido, and I got to find her, the love of my life, you know. Now, she ain't wrote me in a year, 2 years, but I got to find her. So I go find her. She walking the streets like I know she would. And we ready to go. And I'm like, all right. And this is on a Friday. I'm supposed to report to my PO on Monday. And we do some stuff. And I go into my PO that Monday morning. And I'm looking like, she like, what the hell? Have you been drinking or using? I'm like, no. I had to walk here. I had to do this. I had to do that. I didn't sleep. They had bed bugs. I'm making up all these excuses. But before I tell you what happened is I was sitting in jail and I was in intake and they have bunks. And I'm laying in the bunk and there's this guy next to me and I'm looking at him. And I saw myself in this guy. His name was Slick. He was about 70 years old. He was on his fifth bed. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I don't want to be that. I do not want to be that guy. I'm thinking he should be somewhere with his grandkids. All right? So, I get it. When I go there, she asks me, hey, have you been using? I said, no. Have you drank? No. Because that's what I do. I lie. I'm a liar. And for some reason, Slick popped in my head. She told me one more time. She said, look, I can put you in jail today. And for the first time I was honest with somebody, I told her yes. That day was the first time I was truly honest with somebody. I told her yes. And she said, you know what? She didn't say, I'm going to lock you up. She didn't say, oh, that's bad. No, she said, I'm going to help you. I'm going to send you to a program. We have Prop 36, and you're eligible for it. All right? That's when my journey began. All right? So she started calling off these places. Guy back there has my shirt on. Alpha Project. That's where I went to. She said Alpha, Casa Rafael, Alpha Project. I picked that one. And the only reason I picked that, I had another friend that used to go there. He went there. I was locked up at Vista County for about a year. And he would come in four times. And I'd be like, Chuck, where you going? Oh, I'm going to Casa. Chuck, come back 2 months later. Chuck, where you going? I'm going to Casa. I'm going to get sober. Now, the last time Chuck showed up, I was going, I said, hey, Chuck, Where are you going? I'm going back. He said, B. He always calls me B. He said, B, I think I'm done. And I said, really? Bullshit. You ain't done. I know you ain't, Chuck. I tell you what. When I get back, I'm going to find you. We're going to get some drink, and we're going to get that other stuff, and we're going to have a good time. He was like, no, B, I'm done. And I said, bullshit. I went off, came back. And when I went to Casa that day, Chuck was there. Chuck had a year. And if it wasn't for Chuck always telling me about Casa, I wouldn't have went to Casa. So he was putting my life, and I believe today, because I do have a higher power working in my life. He was working back then when I didn't think he was working. All right? I love that. I love that, the saying, the one where it shows God in the footsteps. I love that because I believe that. When I only saw one, he was carrying me. He carried me a lot. I got shot at. I've been shot at. I've been all this crazy stuff, and I'm still alive today. And there's other people that shouldn't be. But anyway, I get to Casa. I start my program, and Chuck's there, got a year. And I'm like, wow, this is great. But then reality kicks in. You know, like, I start reading these steps, traditions and steps. And I'm like, really? You want me to see? That's why they're numbered, so you do them in order. See, I always wanted to do things my way. I jump. You ever buy a bike or something, and the instructions are there? See, I'm the guy that looks at the instructions and says, crumple them up. I don't need them. I got this. And then my kid's going down the street sideways because I done threw everything away because I did it my way. For the first time in my life, I started listening to men and women in this program. Service work, you know, do the steps, get a sponsor. I didn't trust men when I got here, you know. I'm a criminal. I'm a liar. Why am I going to trust you, you know? But I say, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. You know, if you're tired, just give it a shot. I heard that too. Give it a year. If you don't like your results in a year, we'll refund your misery. I'm like, what? One day at a time. All right? I used to hear that too. And I'm like, well, I always live one day at a fucking time. What are you talking about? What they meant was live a spiritual life one day at a time. See, I was spiritually broken when I got here. All right? I told you how I felt about God. But being willing, that's all you have to be, willing. All right? The people who wrote this book were salesmen. In the old book, it says, get sold on new ideas. All right? I had to get sold on new ideas because my ideas weren't working. I kept getting the same result. I kept getting locked up. I kept getting that immoral, incomprehensible moral demoralization. Excuse me. I just get excited about this program because you know what? I have a friend that says I get to live two lifetimes in one life. All right? And I do, you know. What it's like now, I'm trying to rush through everything. Like he says, if you really want to get the full story, see me after the meeting. I'll tell you all of it. I could write a book. But anyway, so today what I do, you know, I got them kids. I was homeless in the park with my kids. All right, that I did. I used to think I was the best homeless person out there because I would send my kids to school. And here's the truth of the matter. I wanted to send them to school because I needed somebody to hold them while I drank and did what I did. School was good for that. All right? It wasn't because they needed to go to school, because I needed them to get away from me so I can be who I thought I needed to be at the time. All right? Today, I'm not that guy. Today, I have the kids with me. Well, they're not kids anymore, but they're all grown. You know, I have grown kids today. And a lot of them, just like I burnt my father's house down twice, they're paying me back too. All right? I got two of them that live with me now, and they keep telling me they're a grown man, and they're going to do what they do. All right? And I'm like, wow, okay. I sponsor men today. I work a program. Service work is very important to me. I volunteer at the North County First Step House. That's a detox. It's fashioned after Charlie Street up in Costa Mesa. I still go to Casa when I can. go back there, get them guys hope, because that's what I needed, hope. My first meeting, I heard hope. What is hope? Aspiration. I had aspiration. I had some hope. And then it turned into faith because I knew it was going to work. I saw it in you guys. You know, the men and women who's been around, I get to see it work in their life. You know, I have men. My sponsor name is Craig O. He's a great guy. My sponsor before him was Garland W. That man saved my life. You know, that man saved my life. I don't know, you know, when I get out of me, life is better. All right. When I go up in here by myself, it's scary. I have all these crazy thoughts. I can convince myself that it wasn't too bad. All right. There was nights I would be out in the park smoking, drinking, cold like it is now. Said I would never do it again, but the next morning I was able to convince myself it wasn't that bad last night. Let's go do it again. Today I don't have to convince myself that. Today I know life is better. You know, I'm employable today. I used to couldn't keep a job. Well, I could, but I would quit because I thought you knew what I was doing. So I would quit before you did. I would quit before you fired me. All right? Today I have a job. Today I have a, it's a funny job. My job lets me see me every day. All right, I'm a train operator for the San Diego Trolley. I drive the red train. If you ever been on it, that might have been me driving you around. And today is kind of funny because when I go to 12th and Imperial, I get to see all my rowdy friends. And if, that's who I was. I was that guy with the tarp. Maybe out there talking to myself once in a while, you know. And I get to see that. That's my higher power saying, look, all right, there you are. This is still waiting for you. Everything you think ain't waiting for you is still waiting for you. You know, I speak to men when they come back and say they relapse. And first thing I say is, welcome back. Second thing I ask is, how was it? All right. And none of them ever said it was good. Third, I ask, what are you going to do different? Because what you did the first time didn't work. What are you going to do different? All right, if you have relapsed, another relapse does not have to be part of your story if you don't want it. All right, when I got here, I didn't have self-esteem. All right, I went to the men in this room and said, how do I get self-esteem? And they told me, do esteemable acts. That's how you get self-esteem. All right? Change what you're doing. I know I used to hate that one too. Change, you got to change one thing. What is that? Everything. And that is true. You know, that is true. It don't seem true, but it is true. I had to change the people. My phone now does not have a lot of alcoholics. Well, it does, honestly. There's a bunch of alcoholics in my phone, but they're recovering. They're recovering, like Richard said. You know, the first part of our book, it says, the 100 men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous, what this book is for is to show you exactly how we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. All right, that's what that book is for, I believe, Rick. I believe you mentioned something about that book back there. All right, get the book. If you don't have that book, read the book. All right, give yourself a break. I was told I would be loved until I could love myself. And they were right. You know, they were right. Today I do love myself. Today I look in the mirror and I like who I see. Before I did not like who I see. All right. Got 10 minutes. I don't know. I'm not, you know, this program has given me a lot, and I can go on. There's not enough time to really tell you what I got out of this, but I can tell you I have peace of mind today. I fit in my skin today. I didn't fit before. There was one time I was out on the street, and it was the worst. I was sleeping in the stairwell of a hotel down in Escondido called Mount Vernon. It's like the shadiest hotel. People get stabbed there and all that. And I'm sleeping in the stairwell. And it was like 2 in the morning. I didn't have nothing left, and I was just stuck with me. And that was the most miserable I had been with in a long time. And the problem was, that morning, remember I told you that part about I can convince myself of anything? That next morning when the sun came out and I got warm, oh, it wasn't that bad. You know, today I know it wasn't that bad. Today I do not have to live that. Today what I need to do is trust God, clean house, and help others. That's three things. Simple. To be a maximum service to the men and women of this program. And not even just the program. See, because we take this program with us when we deal with the public, when we deal, go to work. All right? I got to do that too. They need it too. There's a bunch of normies out there that need a program. All right? I know it. I see them every day. All right? And what I do is, by me doing what I do, it shows. And just a lot of times I'll pull into a station with a smile on my face, and everybody be looking like, what the hell is he smiling at? You know? But that's all right. The best day I had since I've been on that job, one day I was going down on the blue line, and I don't know what came over me. It was a beautiful day, and I started crying because, and my sponsor said, you hit that bliss, that you knew where everything's going to be all right. And I did. For that one moment, it was like everything was all right. My life was where exactly it was supposed to be. All right, I have I have my kids. I have a daughter that's up in L.A. My youngest daughter, she's up in L.A. doing what she does. And that scares the hell out of me. But I pray for her every night. I don't know. She calls me every once in a while. I don't know where she is. All right. She's doing what I used to do to my family. All right. Because they didn't know where I was. None of them. And all I can do is pray. And that's probably what they did for me, too, was pray. And today, I'm of service. Life is great. It's not always the best. I went through a divorce this year, you know, and that's all right. I have to drink over it. All right. And that's the key. No matter what, a drink ain't going to help me. I joined that club. That's another thing. Join the club. What club? The no matter what club. Okay, whatever. But they right. I did join that club. No matter what, a drink will not help my situation. Because when I did, it always went backwards. All right. Always. So, I don't know how much time I got left.
About 5 more minutes.
I'm going to give y'all 5 minutes to get 5 more minutes. You know what? I know y'all tired of hearing me talk, so I'm going to thank you guys. Hope you got something out of it. Thanks.